This is the Life Nomading Podcast with your host, Ian Hoyt, episode number 5. Hey there, everyone. It's Ian Hoyt again, and this is Life Nomading Podcast, episode 5. Finally, a full hand of episodes. If I can get to 5, I think I can get to 105 and 205 and hopefully forever. This is so much fun. It's great taking on guests and seeing feedback from you guys. And that brings me to the great point. Before we get started, I really want to hear what you guys like, dislike, and want to see more of in this podcast. This podcast is all for you. Yeah, I'm spoiling you. I know you love it. No, I'm just kidding. But really, I want to hear what you love and dislike. So make sure to leave a review in iTunes. Give me an email or find me on social media. I'm everywhere. But let's get back to episode 5. So today I have an awesome guest. His name is David Sherry, and he's one of the co-founders of a company that I love and use every single day. It's Death to the Stock Photo. You'll see what it is. But I'm so excited to have him on here. You know, a year ago today, I looked up to him, and I still do, but it's crazy to think how I'm actually sitting across the table from him and asking him some of the questions I've had for him this past year. So without further ado, I want to get into the interview because it's about an hour long. And thanks so much for listening, and I can't wait to see how you like it. So let's get started. Probably introduce yourself and who you are.
Yeah, David Sherry. I went to Ohio State. I've been messing around with a lot of different startup stuff for the past like 4 years. Finally, something kind of stuck. It was called Death of the Stock Photo. I freelanced for a year, just doing marketing help for startups, kind of just doing anything I could to make money at the time because I didn't know what I was doing. So I kind of had that period of like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know I don't want to work a job. I don't know what my skill set is, but I know I can get stuff done, or shit done, if we're allowed to say that on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I think I was just like searching for what my thing is, launching things, and then finally, something kind of stuck and I, you know, continue to pursue that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, I've sort of known like things you've tried in the mm-hmm. before Death the Stock.
Yeah.
And that sort of, I'm curious to know like how that came about, like did you have like massive failures? Because I can sort of relate, like I'm doing a similar thing to you, like my progression sort of.
Yeah, a lot of failures, a lot of dumb ideas, a lot of good ideas that didn't get executed on. I remember pitching at it's called Idea Pitch, but it's a pitch event where you pitch to investors around town. Thought I had like the best idea ever, pretty much got so rejected. Like the Q&A session at the end was just so brutal because, you know, you go in thinking you have this great idea and then all the questions start hitting like after your pitch is done.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh man, like these people hate this idea. And everything I thought was like golden is totally torn apart.
What was the idea?
That idea was like an internship. It's like the same idea that everybody else in the world has had, but it was an internship program to connect startups with students. It's like everybody's had that idea. Yeah. And I had like some unique distribution plan and I thought that was like my secret sauce. And then everybody pretty much shot it down. That was definitely kind of like an epic failure. I think I'm still trying to. So I guess like since that point, I haven't pitched. Like I haven't raised any funding for Death of the Stock Photo. Mm-hmm. And part of me kind of wonders like, after that massive pitch failure, which I'd had successful pitches before that, I had won pitch events prior to that. I haven't pitched since. So I'm actually curious if like part of my aversion to raising money is because of like that massive failure. But then right out of college, I had kind of this crazy idea, which was basically, I want to be a content machine for a company. So the basic concept was, you know, these companies have such a hard time, or big brands have such a hard time filling their social channels all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw this problem of like, how do you stay relevant on Twitter? How do you stay relevant on Instagram? The web became visual. How are you going to keep up with having enough content? So my solution for brands, this was like right when I graduated, was I'll be your content machine. So I pitched Jenny's Homage, a few brands on the West Coast with this basic concept of, let me travel cheaply, like give me like $6,000 to $12,000. I'll travel for 6 to 12 months, and all I'll do the entire time is just shoot content, write, do video, I'll meet with your customers. And so that was like my initial idea out of college that I tried to launch, and then basically got no's from all the brands, which I totally understand. I was a dumb college kid. And the good thing is, or ultimately now it's a good thing, because Death of the Stock Photo is essentially the same concept, you know, being a content machine, but instead of for one brand, it's for people in mass. It's like the freelance community. And so I think had I gone on one of those trips, had I gotten accepted by one of those companies, I would be in the same spot now, except for I'd have no audience. Right. So ultimately a really good thing that that rejection happened. And then a year later, you know, when Death of the Stock Photo started going, I kind of got to do the same type of work, but on my own terms with my own community without a brand's yes or no. So the big lesson for me at that point was basically like, you have to pick yourself. No brand is going to give you the green light to do that thing that you want to do. No company is going to do that for you. You kind of have to create the opportunity.
Right. Yeah. So, that's interesting. Did that idea with with the brands sort of stem into Death to Stock, or was it,
I don't think I necessarily like saw that connection then. I see it now.
It's the same idea.
Totally. And even, you know, more connected is our road trip. So 6 months into Death of Stock, we had this community that we had built. Basically, we ran a road trip that was crowdfunded by our community. So we hit 5 cities, Chicago, New York, Big Sur, Seattle. And essentially, it was that same road trip that we wanted to take, but it was with our own community. So the same trip I was pitching to brands, we now ran with our own community. So that kind of came full circle too. And when we ran that road trip, I remember like thinking back to my pitch to Jenny's and my pitch to Homage and everybody else, like, and kind of feeling redemption a little bit. I kind of wanted to, really great brands. Yeah. Well, I kind of wanted to like sit in their face and be like, yeah, like I did this with my own terms. I think there was definitely some parallels to the road trip and the trip I wanted to take with the brands. There's definitely some parallels to the problem I saw with brands and the problem we solved with Death of the Stock Photo.
Right.
But I don't think it was like that clear when it happened.
Well, it's sort of crazy. I mean, life nomading, I mean, your photos have elevated my brand to what I want it to be. It's pretty sweet because I mean, as a blogger for the last like 5 years, you know, you always want to have visual aspects with your, with your content. And it's like, you know, it's hard to keep fresh and really quality things, especially if you don't have a budget,
right?
Which I don't.
Right.
And so it's like, your brand solves that problem.
Right.
And so it's sort of like elevated me to a status where at first glance, people are going to think that, you know, I have big budgets because I'm creating, or I have these great visual aspects to my content.
Right.
But, you know, I don't. So
yeah,
it's really great that you're providing that stuff for sure.
Yeah, we want to enable the community. We want to remove barriers to making something. So we had a collaboration with Medium, which is a writing platform, last week. We also did something with them last month. But the basic idea was, if you're a writer, it's really hard to get started writing. Or if you want to blog, it's really hard to get started. So our goal is to remove the barriers for that. So we provided 10 photos, and then we brought in an author who provided a writing prompt, and then Medium is a platform that you can write on that day. So that was basically this campaign to help people get started with a habit of writing by taking away all the things that they could, you know, basically make an excuse about.
Right.
I don't have photos. I don't have a place to write. I don't know what to write about. And so we kind of gave them those tools and said, here, you can get started. And so, yeah, our whole thing is about empowering the community, getting them to create, inspiring them to create. And I think we have kind of a nice blend of, it's a utility, it's a tool, but it's also an inspiration. And so we're trying to provide both the tool and the utility at the same time. And I think I've found some clarity on like the creative demographic. And I'd say the creative demographic wants three things. They want validation from their community. That's why Instagram and Dribbble and all those things have come out. They want tools to use, which is why there's Creative Market, there's Getty, there's all these different tools. And they want inspiration, which is the other reason they go on to Dribbble or the other reason they check Behance. Mm-hmm. And so those are the three core problems I think that our demographic has every day when they wake up. and we're not able to solve the validation piece, but I think we do a blend of the utility tool and the inspiring content.
For sure. And I think you made a great point about like Medium and you guys, there's really, if you want to start writing and like get your name and your brand mm-hmm. out there, there's really no excuse to like start practicing on Medium
right.
with visual stuff as well.
Right.
And it's like, I see so many great writers that just aren't sharing their stuff.
Right.
And it's because they're intimidated by creating a blog, mm-hmm. which, I mean, in that aspect, it's really not too hard to start a blog, but if you want the easiest way, I love Medium. Right. I've written a couple right. articles on there, but not to mention Medium has its own sort of like community and mm-hmm. you can find a following there as well. So
right. Right.
I think that's a great point.
Right. Sure. Yeah. It's just about getting people started. And like, there's a really interesting concept I've been thinking about today, which is if you're in the game of inspiration, which I think our brand is partly in the game of inspiration, your goal is to let people get inspired and build things that you couldn't even think about. So like
right.
what we want our user base to do is take our images and be inspired and then create something even bigger than what we're doing. And I think that's just kind of our mission all the time, is like, we need to push the community, we need to poke the community, and we need to inspire them. And our goal is for them to take that inspiration and do something even bigger than us. And part of the reason I was thinking about that is like, there's just an interesting quote, and I think it's from Tupac, actually. He's talking about how like, he hoped that a 4-year-old was listening to his song, who's going to become an even bigger rapper than he was. And that's how inspiration works, is can you take, can you poke a community? Can you give them the creativity that then gets bigger than even yourself? So I think that'd be the ultimate goal for us.
Definitely. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, but maybe explain Death to Stock for
sure.
a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we dig too deep into like
right.
what
yeah,
it
yeah.
is exactly.
So basically every month we send a pack of themed high-res photos to our community. And it's usually 10 photos. There's a story behind it. And that's the free plan or the free membership. And so anybody who wants to can just sign up for that, get free photos, use them right away. The premium membership is kind of like Netflix. It's all you want access for 10 bucks a month. And basically some of the problems we saw with the old model was there's all this legal ambiguity. So you're signing in and there's like different sizes you can download. There's different licenses.
Mm.
We removed that. So the app there's no even thing to read about when it comes to legal. It's all under one license. The second thing is pricing can be crazy. So it's one set price for all you can download. It's not $300 for this photo, $15 for that one. You know, how do you even value two different photos? I'm not even sure.
yeah.
And so we wanted to remove, just strip down everything to the bare essentials. So the app is literally just a photo grid that you just can click one click download whatever you want.
Yeah. I when I go to your site, at least your
mm-hmm, marketing that, site. Yeah.
It's super simple. You know, you have simple choices.
Right.
And obviously visually awesome, but
right.
Yeah. I love how you guys have your site and everything laid out. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we have this big free list they're kind of our marketing arm for us, which is the nice thing about having an email list. We have a really tight relationship with them. And then we have this premium membership, which is people who need more than just the free photos we send out. We send out an extra pack that's exclusive to them. And most recently, our newest initiative is if you're a premium member, part of your money goes back into the community.
Mm.
So every month we fund a photographer to do an interesting creative project. So an example of that is this month, there's a 16-year-old kid from Detroit who's taking pictures of Michigan to kind of tell the story of the state that not many people know. Like he thinks his state's beautiful. Not many people know that. And so we financially back his travel to shoot some areas in Michigan. Those photos go back into the community for our premium members to use. And it's kind of like this cyclical thing. So it's kind of a cool membership to be a part of. So I think some people join because they like the community aspect of it. Some people just really need photos all the time.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Does the funds fund someone from within the community or not mm-hmm. necessarily?
Not necessarily. We let people submit. I think we might branch into other areas too, not just photography. We've dabbled in fonts. We've done a font before. We've dabbled in illustration. And so I think if someone from the community had that skill set, we could definitely fund them. But we wanted to kind of prove the model. So we actually ran 5 of those trips before we even announced that the premium membership was doing that. And once it was working for about 5-6 months and sustainable, then we said, okay, here's where your money's going, back into the community. And if you look at, going back to what I was saying about our demographic, I think that's something they care about. So that's just another piece that our demographic wants to support each other.
Right.
And so this allows them to do that as well.
That's awesome. Yeah, I saw the, what was it, the 35mm font? Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Is that something that you can purchase, or mm-hmm. is it part of the membership? How's yeah. that sort of working?
Yeah, we have kind of like this, I feel like our business model is really hard to explain, because there's just a lot of different stuff we try. Uh-huh. The font was just for purchase. It was kind of a collaboration with a guy we'd known for about 6 months. So usually when, there's a lot of creative people that just reach out to us being like, hey, we like what you're doing. Can we help? Can we submit? Can we do something together? And if anything feels natural, which I think for us, that collaboration felt natural, we'll try it. So we might have some other like weird stuff happening soon. And it's just because we have a platform that allows us to do that. So the Medium thing was just an interesting collaboration. We felt like it was adding value. The font was something we wanted ourselves. And I think it was cool from the aspect of like, no brand has their own font really. So I thought that was kind of fun. Like instead of doing like t-shirts or stickers, it's like, well, let's make a font. We're geared towards designers.
That's awesome.
So yeah. Yeah. We're open to doing any interesting project if it benefits our community and we think it's quality.
Definitely. How long has Death to Stock been around?
Yeah. So we started in July, 2013. It was six months of just the landing page. So everything was email based before we did anything else. After the community started picking up through like basically email marketing, we cobbled together like this really shitty premium product that was just three different systems that we used together. So instead of using Stripe or anything, we used Gumroad, which yeah. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it.
I've used Gumroad before.
Yeah, Gumroad is just a simple system that lets you sell products.
And you can do subscriptions on there too.
And you can do subscriptions and stuff too. So
it's very basic though.
Yeah. So our first product, it was so shitty. People had to create two different accounts on two different sites just to sign up, which is insane. So people went down to Gumroad and they purchased their subscription on Gumroad. And then after they filled that out, we'd email them saying, okay, now you can go create an account on this site, which was a site called Pass. Okay. It's kind of like Dropbox, but for photography. So then the people would create a Pass account, and then we'd send them a unique like login so that they could access Pass and get their photos.
Wow.
And then we are mailing them through MailChimp to update them on the product. So literally people had their payment info on Gumroad, their account on Pass, their like content was coming through MailChimp. It was horrible, but the whole purpose of that is, can we prove that people want to pay for this before we build anything? So
right.
I think it was 9 months in before we started any development. And that's when we made our first like web app that basically, the cool thing is if you do it that way, you take all of the tech that's being used separately and just combine it. So when we wanted to build our first product, we just said, we know we need payment. That's Gumroad. Remove that. We know we need something like Pass. You know, that's this new thing we're going to build. We know we need like the update piece. And so everything was already happening. We just made it into our own combined web app, awesome. If that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I lost my train of thought.
What was I gonna say? I'm a big believer in like do everything manually before you build. So that was, I think, a good example of let's just use as many third-party systems as we can. And if they work, we know exactly what to build. We're not guessing. It's just the same thing, but integrated and not shitty to use.
Yeah, you're definitely limiting the risk too, you know, proving
right.
your validation.
Yeah, and Gumroad's free. Pass might have been free.
That's crazy.
MailChimp was cheap at the time because we didn't have many subscribers, so right.
Right. I think one thing I've been really interested to talk to you about mm-hmm. on Death to Stock is like promotional and marketing and how mm-hmm. like how you got your foot there. Like
right.
How did you accumulate all these people that are
right.
raving fans? Because I think
right.
if people use Death to Stock or know about Death to Stock, they know about Death to Stock.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, I think like this is a hard question to answer because there's so many different things, but it's definitely a perspective thing. Like, I think this is such a small nuance, but like we approach every little detail of the business with, I think, a perspective that allows people to connect with the brand. So it could be as small of a thing as me personally emailing and trying to hop on the phone with every single person that signs up, to messaging and making that feel friendly, to showing our faces on the website, showing our faces in the email, having our own signature. So a lot of what we did is we want creative people to feel like they're like home when they're with our brand. And so if you want to make people feel like they're home, it's how do you make people feel comfortable? How do you make people feel like they're welcome and invited? And so I think there's a lot of things we did that show that. And hopefully that story is kind of apparent to subscribers. But on a more like tactical level, early on, anytime anyone used our photo, I would comment on it. I would retweet it. I would, people would blog. And they'd blog about like baking. It'd be like, I'm baking brownies this week or whatever. And I would read their post and be the only comment.
Right.
Oh, like, I love those brownies. I'm going to try this recipe this weekend. Like David at Death to the Stock photo.
Sure.
So just letting people feel like they're encouraged when they are creating something. So I would just, the way I did that was just go to Google Analytics and see where the images were being used, see the backlinks, and then comment. But I think a lot of like...
Were they linking your photos to Death to Stock?
Yeah. So the funny thing is say you don't have to link to us. And by saying don't link to us, which is something I think the old model has that, you know, isn't necessary all the time. People say, oh, I know I don't have to, but I want to.
Right.
So it's kind of a different dynamic there too. But I think from like a tactical level, a lot of apps or a lot of businesses try to solve a problem for their customer. But once it's happened, there's no real follow-up and encouragement. So I think it's cool if you can see the way, I mean, every app, every business is trying to create some type of customer success. And so when you see that success, if you can go in as follow-up and encourage, I think it kind of helps propel things forward as well.
Definitely. I think what I'm hearing is almost like you want to be on the journey with them, and even going to their blog and commenting. I know I do that a lot with like people that read my stuff. And
right.
Like just taking that little time to know that you care about them.
Right.
I think goes miles.
Right. I think it helps a lot with referrals and just being sticky in someone's mind. Because if a company is going to take that effort, the next time someone brings up, I need images or whatever it is, I need an email client, you're going to remember that conversation. You're much more likely to refer.
Right.
I think like when we started out, the first thing that was a big help to us was we had a community that we knew had the problem, which was our peers.
Right.
So if you've ever heard about like product market fit, basically saying like, you know, do you have the right fit with your right demographic? I think there was an element of product market fit, but there's a new thing that people are starting to talk about, which is founder market fit.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, are you someone who fits in with the demographic you're trying to reach?
Right.
And I think there's some really good examples of that. If you've heard of Bevel, Tristan Walker is a great entrepreneur who, African-American guy making African-American shaving gear. And it's like, that is founder market fit.
Right.
He knows his demographic. He blends in. He can basically talk to them directly. Similar to if you wanted to start something that was related to piloting, it
right.
kind of makes sense. You know how to talk the language. So I think it was a mix of maybe founder market fit because we knew our demographic, but also some type of product fit there for the customers.
And I think that's a great point is like my first startup was a clothing brand for aviation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was so easy to, it wasn't even, you're not trying to be a brand. Mm-hmm. You are a brand. And like when you talk to people and you follow up with them, everything's just easy because that's what you want to do. And that's like who you are. So I think
right.
that's a key thing. It's like find something that is just ingrained in you and then just try to grow. I mean, growing it obviously is the hardest part, but you're going to have
right.
more raving fans if you obviously fit, you know, founder fit. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about finding the right like mission for yourself too. So this could be any job or anything like that. But yeah, if you're feeling mission aligned with your lifestyle, then not only are you more motivated, but you're also going to be able to, talk the talk. And yeah, it's just an interesting concept that I don't think was previously that big, but people are starting to talk more about, which is this, is it founder market fit? And you know, some people are motivated by other stuff. I mean, I can't remember the guy's name, there's an entrepreneur that talks about how all he cares about is money, and I think he kills it, and that's totally okay if that's right. what you believe in. But I think if you're in it for more of a mission, you need to be mission aligned with what the company's doing.
100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I agree. I want to get a little into you mm-hmm. personally mm-hmm. A little more and sort of sure. dig a little deeper there.
Okay. For all anyone right. that wants all to right. listen. Let's do it. Yeah, yeah.
I'm really interested mm-hmm. to see or hear what mm-hmm. maybe your biggest struggles have been.
Yeah, yeah.
And, going throughout that.
Yeah, the first year of freelancing is always crazy up and down. Mm-hmm. And I think for any entrepreneur, it's questioning, am I doing the right thing right now? And like, is this actually a smart decision for me or am I crazy? And so I think I had that for a year and a half, probably, maybe even before and in school. And it's something you still have now, but it's not as frequent. So I think the struggle is always like, what am I doing? Nobody thinks I should be doing this. Am I going to be successful? Am I not? Am I going to fail? Am I going to eat tomorrow? And so those questions come up. Yeah, those right. questions come up.
I have that question
every yeah, day. Yeah, yeah. So in the beginning, it's every day. And then it's a mix of releasing that and like, realizing you don't need to stress about that, even if it still is imminent, maybe. And a mix of just maybe getting more confident. So yeah, I'd say I used to joke it was every other day. So one day everything's awesome, the next day everything's shitty, the next day everything's awesome, shitty, and then sometimes it's in one day you're feeling that. So it was definitely, I'd say, a year and a half of feeling like that all the time. And now it's more like twice a week. So 2 out of 7 days. So I don't know. I'm shitty at math. So
you're getting better.
2 out of 7 is better than, 1 out of 2.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I'm doing the freelance lifestyle and it's like, oh, I love working remotely. Like, obviously that's everything mm-hmm. that I love, but especially starting out and being pretty greenhorn, it's, you're up and down.
Right. So the cool thing about doing that though, is it actually kind of, I think that's what creates your freedom, because if you can live on nothing, mm-hmm. then that's the lowest you can go. And so there's big freedom in feeling like you can take a big risk because you know what the other side of things is at. So I think the people who are more experienced with some of that struggle are able to take bigger risks because they know where the bottom is and it's not that bad. Because that's the other thing, is it's not that bad. Like, right. we're pretty lucky still. So even when it was really shitty, I was still doing what I wanted. Debt the Stock could disappear tomorrow and I feel like I could just start again and it would suck, but it's better than the alternative, so.
Yeah, I totally agree. You get to realize how little you need mm-hmm. to actually, make ends meet. And mm-hmm. and that's another thing I want to stress is like, mm-hmm. if you're doing what you want to be doing, mm-hmm. then you don't need other costs to supplement what you're unhappy with in life. Right. So like I was, right. when I was working at an advertising agency, mm-hmm. extremely unhappy,
right.
but then I'd be buying stuff right. that, I could, I don't know,
right.
but
just
it's
whatever.
Just, mm-hmm. yeah. So now I don't need to be spending money on a crap ton of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm doing what I love and I'm paying rent right now. So
and I'm still in that spot. I mean, I pay myself $2,000 a month. So it's like, even if the business is doing really well, you're reinvesting.
Right.
I mean, you're feeling a little bit better. Like there is that buffer now if I need it. But yeah, I mean, even now I'm trying to stay lean just because, that's all I need. I don't need much more than that. And if now it's crazy because I'm like, man, at some point I might be able to pay myself an extra $500 to $1,000 a month. That sounds like $1 million to me at this point. So
right, you're like, what am I going to do with that?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Get more coffee or like,
exactly.
It's crazy to think about. Like, I want to get to the goal of like $2,000 a month. And I would be like, that's totally fine with me. Everything else, I'll just sock away for, random ass trips. But
yeah, it sounds like a huge amount of money. And that's the good thing is that, if you can then create a little bit past that, you feel like you're balling and you're not still.
But I mean, then again, you're on your own. Like no one's, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you're self-creating this mm-hmm. and that's mm-hmm. the beauty of this mm-hmm. all, right?
Yeah. And the scary part for sure.
And the scary part.
Yep. Yep.
So who has inspired you? What inspires mm-hmm. you?
Yeah. So, I think what inspires me is I like to take elements of other, cultures, other interesting just hobbies and stuff like that. Like, I'd say there's kind of like a, I don't know the right term, like a, not a tunnel, but like, there's kind of this tunnel of, if everyone's talking about the startup stuff, you're so like in this bubble that I think you're missing out on a lot of other interesting stuff that's happening in the world. So I like fashion, music, extreme sports. That's the stuff that I want to take elements of. What's somebody who's trying to break into the skateboarding world doing to get attention? What are they doing that's interesting? What are they doing that's organic and fun because they are just cool people? And then I want to pick elements from that and see how can I apply that to what I'm doing now. So I definitely think everything that inspires me is outside of the business world, that's for sure. I mean, there's business elements, but yeah, what's like that grungy like skater kid from California up to when he's with his friends trying to make fun videos? That's usually the stuff that's actually raw and interesting. And so then you want to say, okay, well, how can I take an element of that and apply it to something here? And the metaphor I use is like the graffiti artist. Like, what's the graffiti artist doing and how can I apply that to what I'm working on?
That's great. I think I used to have a problem getting sucked into like all the business stuff, like soaking in every single piece of startup and being around a community of other quote unquote entrepreneurs are like talking about entrepreneurship and not doing it.
Yeah.
And then finally one day I was like, this is bullshit.
Right.
Yeah. I just like turned all that off
and
just like said, I'm just going to focus on creating my stuff.
Right.
And then, you know, seeing everything else.
Right. Right. And you want to have your own like unique perspective and work. And if you're a blogger or anybody putting out content, I think all people care about is hearing from a unique perspective. So if you're just saying the same thing, you're never going to get traffic because it's all about having an opinion that is unique to yourself, not kind of just re-saying everything else has been said.
For sure.
But
I mean, hate to harp on myself again, but like I've had that problem. And I mean, I just posted an article on my blog called like the Ian Hoyt PSA.
Okay, nice.
And it was like, you know, I'm getting back to my voice. Like I was writing more for what I think people will love and not writing what I love.
Right.
And then I saw like my last blog, I was more successful because I was not listening to anything. I was just writing like what my heart meant.
Right, right.
And then I got away from that and now I'm just going to get back into it because people were more diehard about that blog than they have been in here. And I think that there's a disconnect and I'm going to be honest about that, but you're totally right there.
Yeah. And that's the cool thing about blogging is actually everybody can have a following if they just speak the way that they want to speak.
Right.
But 99% of people don't do that. So I think if there's a trick to blogging, it's just writing how you feel. But the hard part of blogging is actually doing that and not censoring yourself. Yeah, I blogged every day or every week for 2 years. And it was funny. My mom is on the list, which is funny. And I think I still would like say stuff, but it definitely was some censorship there. And she really appreciated it. I think she liked hearing from me every week or whatever. But I kind of dream about having a blog that my mom would never see that I can just say whatever, because I think that's the best type of content for sure.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I don't filter myself and I think my mom has a heart attack every time.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, there's plenty of bloggers that'll say, if you're not scared to hit ship, then don't even post it. It's not worth it.
Right.
So,
yeah, right. That's a huge thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you're not pushing that, that's a huge thing.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So I think at some point I'll probably start that again and try to be the next level of opening up, being honest. But yeah, that's always the stuff people connect with for sure.
I'm not sure if you know who Chris Ducker is by chance.
No.
He's a content guy. But I was watching a video just recently. I think it's on his website. And he was talking to a crowd and he was saying how when I was trying to figure out something on to do on the web, like what I'm going to blog about, I was having a hard time because what I wanted to do and what I wanted to write about was already being said. And so I didn't know where I was going to find my unique selling point for my blog. And then he said, but I realized that there's only one Chris Ducker.
Right.
And if, you know, I use my voice, that's going to set me apart. So just to sum up that whole thing, it's like,
yeah,
everyone's their own brand.
Right.
Everyone can create value and everyone should do it in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's just getting more and more important is having your own personal brand, having your own distinct style because that's what people care about. They don't want to hear from people who are just saying the same. Everybody likes controversy and stuff like that, and that right. comes from people just being honest. And if people don't love and hate you, then you're probably doing something wrong. So we definitely have a lot of people who like hate death stock, but that's a good thing. So
yeah, if people don't hate mm-hmm. you,
yeah.
then you're not doing it right. I mean, yeah, like
right,
and that's okay,
right?
You know,
mm-hmm.
you're that's yeah. Perfect.
We have a funny email because like we don't get a ton of hate, but I have a funny email that I have saved.
Yeah, what kind of hate do you get?
Well, the funny one that I have saved that I actually wrote about in a blog post. All it said was "fuck you."
Really?
Which I thought was funny. So I mean, usually there's like, I don't know, they want to explain themselves and stuff, but we thought that one was kind of funny because it was just like so simple. It's like okay, but yeah, I mean.
Do you respond to that, or do you just?
No, I don't respond to that. Anything criticism, and this is something I think that Seth Godin talks about that I agree with, is anything that's critical, they cared enough to reach out and say something, so you should actually thank them. So anything that, even if it's kind of angry, if there's any type of somewhat legitimate criticism, you should thank them because that's better than people being silent.
Right.
So if it has any nugget of like, they have an idea here that like might be valid, then we always say thank you. If it just says fuck you, we don't respond. I was going to post his email.
You're not going to reply fuck you?
No. Yeah, right. I had and it's so funny too, because you get so many people saying nice stuff and then you get one of those and that's all you can think about for like 2 weeks.
Right.
Which is just so true. But yeah, I wrote a post and I actually included the email in the post. I blocked out his email. I was going to make it public because I always think that's kind of funny if you can like track him down, find his picture, put it up, and then try to get people, a bunch of people to see it.
That'd be hilarious.
It's kind of, you know, you can kind of shame him, but whatever. It's not worth the time. So
it's
not worth thinking about.
It's actually really funny, and I think I was telling you this yesterday, but I was a little drunk at our house show, but it's funny because like a year and a half ago, I've lived down in Columbus for like 2.5 years,
mm-hmm.
and about a year and a half ago, I met with someone that was a huge fan of Death to Stock.
Mm-hmm.
We went on a date, whatever.
I'm
past it. I'm over it. And I was introduced to this thing called Death to the Stock photo.
Mm-hmm.
And I started looking into it. And somehow I found you on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
was following you. I was like, dude, this guy is rocking it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, awesome. And it was crazy because I'm like, I'm never going to meet him. I'm never going to, you know, interact with Death to Stock. I'm going to obviously use their photos and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I didn't expect, you know, what has come about in the last year. It's
right,
crazy.
Right.
Like your brand and you, I was looking up to like a year and a half ago, and now it's like
cool.
Crazy. Now we get to hang out. Who do you look up to?
Yeah. It's a good question. I think, so I don't want to bash Columbus because there's a lot of great things, but there's not a ton of people here that I feel like are, I guess like tracking on my same level.
Right.
I have a good kind of mentor friend of mine, Brian Serker, who helps me out a lot. But I think the cool thing about the internet is you can have mentors that aren't people you know. So, I mean, Seth Godin to me is like the guy, and I get to quote unquote hang out with him all the time by reading his blog, listening to his podcast. So I try to, what I end up doing is instead of looking for a lot of mentors, I kind of wanted to simplify and kind of be more efficient about the way I looked at things. And so what I did was I said, I'm not going to read 10 different VC blogs. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to prescribe to one and let his answers and let his thoughts be the default answer, which, yeah, maybe it's not the best thing. But I think it helps kind of save time. So like Ramit Sethi does finance stuff.
Okay.
All of my finance stuff, whatever his take on it is, that's just what I'm going to accept. Because I don't have time to...
There's so much noise.
Yeah, there's so much noise. So I try to pick a few people total. Like, I want 5 people max. And then I'm just going to trust that they've done the research, that they're far enough along. And then I go really deep reading all of their work. So I've read and listened to every single Seth Godin thing ever. And I see that as maybe being better than reading 1,000 different marketing people.
Right.
So I'm trying to...
What's your favorite Seth Godin book?
All Marketers Are Liars is good,
okay.
Which is like tell stories. But he has a new audiobook out that's really, really good. I mean, maybe his best thing yet. Really? But yeah, so I try to like find 3 to 5 total people to look up to, and then just default my perspective on, say it's like a VC deal or an acquisition, I would just want to, whatever their take is, I'm going to just let that be it. Because it's too hard for me to like have so many different noises and opinions, and most advice should be taken with a grain of salt anyways. But yeah, so I don't know if that's the right thing or not to do, but it works, I guess, for me.
That's interesting.
I'm trying to just take the religion. Like, I want, like, whatever the Seth Godin religion is on marketing, I'm going to read all of his books and just prescribe to that. Whatever the finance thing is, I'm going to get that. Whatever the lifestyle thing is, which Chris McAllister actually is like...
Oh, really?
He's like the guy that everything... His way of just living your life, living your mission, work-life balance, like, he's the guy that has the answers to me right now.
That's great. He's actually going to be on this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So, not to go too far down that topic, but best thing I've done in the past 2 years, or best thing I've spent my money on the past 2 years, is working with a coach to, unblock your creativity, which Chris McAllister was massive for me in doing that.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. I think having someone who can like,
he's a great dude too.
Yeah. Yeah. Having someone to mentor you in, like, say the field you kind of want to pursue, which is like marketing, having someone to mentor you in maybe more financial aspects of your life, having someone who can help you look inward and start learning more about your habits, your destructive habits, easily the best thing I've done past 2 years, maybe past 6 years, spent money on for sure.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Do you have a person you prescribe to, mm-hmm, for like photography? You
have... Interesting. Yeah. So this is like, maybe goes back to my earlier point about being inspired by other fields. Mm-hmm. I feel like I like photography that's not like my own. I don't do anything that's extreme sport, but there's some extreme sport photographers I like. My favorite photographer of all time, though, is kind of interesting, I think. He's 17, 18, lives in California. I don't even think anybody knows about him, really. He just takes photos of him and his friends hanging out. Most authentic imagery, really? I've seen online. I'm actually hoping I can hire him at some point.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I'm inspired by his photography. His name is Joe Curtin.
Okay.
Literally, I don't think any, I mean, he probably has like 500 Instagram followers.
Does he have a website or?
Yeah. Yeah. He has like Flickr, a Tumblr. Yeah. Flickr. That's where I found him on Flickr. Okay. But the reason I appreciate his work is that guy, I mean, I don't even know him. We've kicked emails back and forth like once or twice.
Well, he's going to get a link. So
yeah. I mean, all he does is like, he just shoots the shit he loves. He shoots his friends. It's just the most authentic imagery I've ever seen. That's awesome. And it's because he doesn't even know I'm talking about this. He doesn't know. Yeah. I think he just creates his art, and nobody else in the world can produce it, because you'd have to be 18 in California with that friend group going on these road trips.
Right.
So I think that's, I'm inspired by that, because you can't force that. And I think that's what brands have a hard time doing too, is you can't force that scenario, and you can't create it out of thin air. It just needs to be that natural.
Right. That's so true. I think, mm-hmm, I mean, when I was at the branding agency, mm-hmm, it's like, there's certain aspects that you can create, but like at the core, there has to be something there with your brand. Right. You can't say what your brand is, really.
Right.
And so, you know, that's a huge thing with people. I think they need to stop forcing things, mm-hmm, and figure out what to embrace, mm-hmm, instead of figuring out what to make, figure out what to embrace.
Right. It's more fun too, for sure. Right. I mean, yeah, you don't want to be, I mean, you can kind of like fight and like just force all these walls to get knocked down to get where you're going, or you could kind of, yeah, ride the river or whatever and kind of just steer. I think, definitely I agree with that.
And I think, I mean, I have it sort of easier since it's just like my personal brand. It's obviously, mm-hmm, harder with more of like an entity, like, mm-hmm, a debt to the soccer, yeah, whatnot, but, yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of the idea, is find something that you're naturally good at, that you want to put your energy into. Yeah, it seems like forcing things probably sucks your energy away versus embracing things, which probably gives you energy. I'm right. Just assuming that's kind of the case.
Right.
So
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Another aspect, mm-hmm, that obviously your company, mm-hmm, you do, and you alluded to wanting to do more, mm-hmm, of, is traveling,
yeah,
and,
yeah,
sort of going around and exploring, mm-hmm, and adventuring. Mm-hmm. What do you like to do
when I travel?
When you travel, yeah, what's your thing?
Well, I guess like if I'm talking personally and less about the brand, I like to pretend like I live places. So I just spent like 2.5 weeks in Seattle, and I like barely. What's that?
I love that place.
Yeah, it was incredible. Luckily, my friend let me have his apartment for the whole time I was there. He was out of town. And so basically, I just went there. I had an apartment there. And, you know, I want to, like, pick up the paper at the doorstep. I want to, like, go to the local coffee shop. I just want to act like I live in the place, which I think is really fun. And I enjoy that. I like going to just hang out at local bars and just chill. But I don't think it's, like, as much of a vacation, I've realized. So I was gone for 2.5 weeks, and I think the most relaxed I felt was on a train. The rest of it wasn't relaxing because it was just like normal life in a mm-hmm. new location. So I really like doing that, but I don't know if that's like the way I relax. But yeah, I just want to go sit in a culture, hang out, flirt with bartenders in different cities. I don't know, like just stuff like that. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
That's fun to go do for sure. That's the way I like to travel.
That's cool. Well, yeah, you're the king of coffee shops, so I'm sure you
find that. Yeah, Testala Coffee. My new thing, too, I'm kind of weird about a few different travel things if we're trying to get into some.
Oh, definitely.
But I attempt to try a pho place, which is like pho noodle soup.
Yeah.
And a barbecue place in every city I go to. And then that's like kind of one weird quirk. I was just in Chicago, went to County Barbecue. It was amazing. Best barbecue in Chicago if you're trying to go.
Plug.
Yeah, right. Yeah, County Barbecue is seriously really good.
Show notes.
Yeah, they have really good cocktails too. So I like doing that and just seeing what cities have the best barbecue or pho. Seattle has really good pho. So that's kind of a weird thing.
That word's so weird.
Yeah, pho ga, which is chicken pho. That's like my like energy. Like I love... That gives me energy.
The food?
Well, yeah, like it cures my hangover is actually the real thing it does because of all like that broth.
Right.
And then the other like weird travel quirk I have is I always like going places twice because I like exploring the first time and I'm more excited when I'm there the first time to come back than I am while I'm there. So like when I eat good barbecue in a new city, all I'm thinking the whole time is like, I can't wait to come back and eat this fucking barbecue one more time.
That's awesome.
So it's great, but it's shitty because like there's a barbecue spot in New York City. Go to New York City, have the best barbecue probably I've ever had. Come back to New York City months later, go to the same barbecue spot that I went to, which is practically sin if you're in New York City.
Right.
There's so many good restaurants, but I don't know. True. I enjoy doing that.
That's awesome. That's really
it's kind of it's kind of weird. I don't know why.
What's your favorite what's your favorite spot, like
my favorite city? New York City for sure.
Okay, cool.
I could see myself moving there maybe.
Same for sure.
Yeah,
it's great. It's like Disney World for adults.
Yeah there's a lot like going on there.
Endless.
Yeah
for sure.
You could spend a lot of time there.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you like the remote working aspect? Do you see yourself having an office ever?
I think I fantasize about it sometimes. I think you can definitely get stuff done in person sometimes that you don't at least feel like you're getting done when you're remote. Allie and I, who's my business partner, which she runs all the creative for Death of Stock. She kills it. She executes on everything, which is why I like working with her. But we work together one or two times a week in person. And that is when I feel like the most gets done. I don't know if mm-hmm. that's just by being there, but I think that's the only hard thing of remote is stuff's getting done, but it doesn't feel like it, at least as someone who's kind of trying to make sure everything's happening.
Right. Definitely. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. What is like, the future? Like, what does the future hold for...
Oh, Death of Stock.
Death of Stock.
Yeah.
For working, are you just going to quit?
Yeah.
Just going to stop and... No.
Yeah, I kind of don't like giving big vision goals, but I like to think that we could be involved in a lot of things that people would say we couldn't be involved in right now. So, like, I kind of have this big dream of Death of Stock kind of becoming, like, the Red Bull of creatives, kind of, where that's awesome. We're facilitating a lot of different creative work. I like to think we could have our own clothing line or product line that's physical. There's a few other markets that I think are pretty broken in the creative space that I think we could fix. So I don't know if this will happen. We should probably be focused, but I could see us having maybe three different general kind of product lines and maybe some other fun stuff on the side and just be kind of like this big creative brand, I guess.
Yeah.
But
I'd love to have a t-shirt of your.
Yeah, yeah. We might be doing some tees soon. So, but yeah, so I like to be kind of crazy and think like, well, shit, what if Death to Stock does whatever, shoes or something? I don't know. So, yeah, well.
Death to Stock shoes.
Yeah, exactly. You have to kind of, I think, like, we have to lead our audience there, but I just mean over time,
right?
If you can empower enough creative people and be that inspiration kind of leader, then I think there's a lot of different interesting things you can do for them to kind of keep that going.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have a creative community there. I mean, it's great. And it's funny because, like, I would stumble across articles talking about backlinking strategies for SEO and photography and writing and all these different blog articles throughout like the year and a half or 2 years. And it's funny, you guys are always mentioned somehow in like this online space. Like it's cool. Just everyone's about, you know, everyone's loving it. So
cool. Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, definitely. I guess just wrapping up here, what advice, I know this is pretty cliche. What advice would you have for someone that is looking to do their own thing or work remotely or?
Yeah. Live cheap. Just learn to live cheap. Yeah. I think like, and maybe this is cause I've gone through so much Seth stuff, but like everyone's kind of becoming like entrepreneur got way overused as like a term and a thing. I think kind of the next thing that will happen that'll be bad eventually when everyone's using it, but it's kind of like artist. I think you have to look at your work like an artist. I think you have to make sure you're taking risks like an artist. And I think the other thing is figure out whatever your platform is for trying things out. I think that's the core thing that you have to create for yourself. You just need a platform. Like, even if I made $0 off Death to Stock, it is a platform to meet people. It's a platform to try things. It's a platform to do other projects I want to do. So I think if you can have this testing ground to try different ideas, then that's all you want, which usually is kind of predicated on having an audience.
Right.
But yeah, if you can do that, then like there's just so many different, like the font, like the shoes, like I don't care what it is. I just need to have a platform that lets me get access to the people who can make that happen. And having something to talk about, like a brand, like a product, like a podcast, it just gets you in the door.
Right.
So I think leverage is, if I was gonna write a book, it'd be about leverage.
Are you gonna write a book?
I don't know, maybe at some point. But yeah, you need leverage.
Leverage.
That's it. The way we got connected with Medium is because we sent something into the mail to someone who wrote about us a year and a half prior, who then quit that job and got a job at Medium. Wow. And like, I just think you never know what that chain of events is. And you just have to kind of always have like your feet in the door by leveraging something. In that case, it was just an interaction. One interaction with one guy. We made sure to go above and beyond, send him something in the mail, quits his job, joins Medium. Now we're partnered with them. So, yeah.
That's got to be huge, too. I mean, Medium's
yeah, yeah. But awesome. it's just leverage, having a way to reach out to people, for sure.
Awesome.
So, yep.
Well, great. I mean, I think we talked about a lot of stuff. Yeah, and I think people will find a lot of value out of this.
Cool.
I will include in the show notes, everyone, the link to Death to Stock. You guys need to go check them out. Like you said, free photo packs once a month, right? And you can also join their premium program and get all the awesome photos that they've done throughout the... How many years was it again?
Year and a half.
Year and a half.
Yeah, July 2013.
Wow, so, that's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing.
2 years maybe. Yeah, or email me, just david@deathtostockphoto.com for whatever. Any questions, anything.
Yeah, and his Twitter and all that fun stuff will be, you know, linked for you.
Yeah.
Once again, thanks so much. Yeah. It's been great talking to you. I'm so glad
It was fun. Yeah.
I couldn't have imagined talking to you like a year ago. Yeah. So this is great. And hopefully you'll be on again sometime.
Yeah, sure. So. Yeah, no, I have fun doing this stuff. So definitely thanks.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks. Yes, that was freaking awesome. Thank you so much, David Cherry, one last time for being on the podcast episode. That episode was so freaking valuable. I think I'm going to go probably listen to it another 100 times before I leave the room. If you don't have that kind of time, I fully understand you have a social life. You can find anything and everything that you might want more information on that we talked about in this episode in the show notes on lifenomading.com. So go to the website and navigate to his episode. It's number 5. And you can literally find anything we talked about. I linked to everything, even the barbecue shop we talked about that he loved in Chicago. So yeah, make sure you navigate there, find all that information, hook up with David Sherry on social media, send him an email. He's a great guy. Like, David Sherry's a great freaking guy. So connect with him and check out Death to the Stock Photo. I use it every day, and you should too if you're a blogger, book writer, really anything. Seriously, visual assets, they have the lockdown on that. Other than that, I just wanted to thank him one more time. David, I really appreciate you being on this episode. I hope you can be on again sometime. As for the Life Nomading Podcast, well, we're going to have another great episode in a couple weeks. So hang tight. Be ready for that to publish in a couple weeks because it's going to be awesome as well. If you have a moment, give us a review on iTunes. I would appreciate it so much. I'll give you a virtual hug. Other than that, I really don't have anything else for you today. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great rest of mid-March. Oh, and tell someone you love them, because why not make someone else's day? That would be awesome. And don't you want to spread awesomeness? I know I do. So, yeah. Okay, I'm done talking. See ya. Thanks. Bye.